It's story time.
Story time, Hans Christian Andersen. I had the privilege just this summer.
You met him?
And I met him, and I said hello, and I said, we're going to do his stories.
No.
I saw his house and all that sort of thing.
In Copenhagen?
Yeah, and they have a replica of his place there in Tivoli in Copenhagen.
Tivoli Gardens in Copenhagen?
Tivoli Gardens. Mm-hmm. Are you ready? Okay. Once upon a time, these are Hans Christian Andersen's own words.
And if we speak too fast, you let us know.
Yeah.
Tell us to slow down.
Once upon a time, there was a prince who wanted to marry a princess, but she would have to be a real one. He traveled around the whole world looking for her, but every time he met a princess, there was always something amiss. There were plenty of princesses, but not one of them was quite to his taste. Something was always the matter. They just weren't real princesses. So he returned home very sad and sorry, for he had set his heart on marrying a real princess.
Now one evening, a storm broke over the kingdom. A lightning flashed. The thunder roared. And the rain came down in bucketfuls. In the midst of this horrible storm, someone knocked on the city gate. And the king himself went down to open it.
On the other side of the gate stood a princess. Goodness, how wet she was. Water ran down her hair and her clothes in streams. It flowed in through the heels of her shoes and out through the toes. But she said that she was a real princess.
We'll find that out quickly enough,
thought the old queen. But she didn't say a word out loud. She hurried to the guest room and took all the bedclothes off the bed. Then on the bare bedstead, she put a pea. On top of the pea, she put 20 mattresses, and on top of the mattresses, 20 eiderdown quilts. That was the bed on which the princess had to sleep. Well, in the morning, when someone asked her how she had slept, she replied,
"Oh, just wretchedly. I didn't close my eyes once the whole night through. God knows what was in that bed, but it was something hard, and I'm black and blue all over."
Well, the prince married her because now they knew that she was a real princess, since she had felt the pea that was lying on the bedstead through 20 mattresses and 20 eiderdown quilts. Only a real princess could be so sensitive. The pea was exhibited in the Royal Museum, and you can go there and see it, if it hasn't been stolen.
Now, that was a real story.
We're reading from Hans Christian Andersen, and these are his exact words now. He says, I want to tell you a story that I heard myself when I was a very little boy, and every time that I have thought of it since, it has seemed to me to be more beautiful. For stories are like people. Some, though not all, improve with age, and that's a blessing.
Have you ever been in Denmark and seen the countryside? If you have, then you must have seen one of those really old cottages that has a thatched roof that's overgrown with moss and a stork's nest perched on its ridge. The walls are crooked, the windows are small, and only one of them has a hasp and hinges so that it can be open. The oven for baking bread juts out of the wall like a well-filled stomach. There was a hedge of elderberries and a tiny pond surrounded by willow trees where a duck and some ducklings swim. In the yard, there's an old dog that barks at everyone who goes by.
In such a cottage, far out in the country, there once lived a farmer and his wife, and they had little that they could get along without. But they did have something, and that was a horse. That horse sounds sick. They had to graze at the edge of the road because they didn't have a paddock. Sometimes the farmer rode on the horse when he went to town, and sometimes his neighbor borrowed it, and that was to the farmer's advantage, for country people believe that one good turn deserves another. But one day, the farmer realized that he'd be doing himself a better turn if he sold the horse or traded it for something which he had more use for. though he didn't know what it could be, his wife assured him
that you will find out soon enough. You know best, Father. There's a market in town today. Why don't you ride in on the horse, and there you can sell it or trade it for something else.
So she...
Whatever you do, I'm sure it'll be right.
Oh, yes,
don't
yes.
interrupt me.
I'm sorry. So she tied his cravat, that's what we used to call ties back in those times, which she knew how to do better than anybody else. She made a double bow, because that made him look more gallant. She brushed his hat with the palm of her hand, and then she... kissed him warmly on the lips, and off he rode on his horse, which was to be sold or traded, just as he saw fit, for striking a bargain was something he knew how to do.
The sun was shining, and there wasn't a cloud in the sky.
I don't see the sun.
The dust road was filled with folk on their way to market, some in wagons, others on horses, many on their own poor legs. It was terribly hot, and there was not a scrap of shade along the road.
Well, the farmer noticed a man who was leading a cow. That was as beautiful as any cow could be. And he thought,
I'll bet that cow gives a lot of good milk.
Then he called to the man,
hey, listen, you with the cow. I'd like to talk with you.
And when the other man turned around, he continued,
I know that a horse is worth more than a cow, but a cow would be more useful to me. Shall we trade?
The man agreed to the trade, for he was getting the better deal.
Now, here's where the story should have ended. But then, it wouldn't have been worth telling, would it? The farmer had done what he had set out to do. And so, he should have turned around and gone back home with his new cow. But he thought that since he had meant to go to the market, it was a pity to miss seeing the market.
So he walked quickly, and the cow walked quickly, and pretty soon they caught up with a man who was leading a sheep. It was a fine animal, with a heavy coat of wool.
Why, a sheep like that I wouldn't mind owning,
he thought.
In the winter, when it gets too cold, you can always take a sheep inside with you. Besides, I don't have enough grazing for a cow, and a sheep is satisfied with what it can find on the side of the road.
And the more he looked at the sheep, the better he liked it.
Say, how would you like to trade your sheep for my cow?
He finally asked, and that bargain was made. Well, he hadn't gone far with his sheep when he spied a man who was sitting and resting on a big stone. He had good reason for wanting to rest. He was carrying a goose that was bigger than most ganders.
A fine, fat goose,
the farmer cried as he lifted his hat.
My, how pretty it would look in our pond, and then Mother would have someone to give the potato peelings to. How often has she said that we ought to have a goose, and now she can have one. What about trading? I'll give you a sheep for a goose and throw a thank you into the bargain.
A sheep for my goose?
Said the stranger.
Well, why not? And you can keep your thank you, for I don't like to drive too hard to bargain.
The farmer tucked the goose under his arm and walked on.
Well, as he came nearer the town, the traffic became greater and greater. All about him were people and animals. There wasn't space for them all on the road. They walked in the gutters and the embankments and even on the fields. The town's gatekeeper had tethered his hen in his potato patch for fear that she might get frightened by all the confusion and run away. The hen's tail was as finely feathered as a rooster's. And as she said,
clack, clack,
she winked. Now what that meant, I cannot tell you. But I do know what the farmer thought.
My, that hen is as good as the minister's best hen, the one that won the prize at the fair. Oh, I wish it were mine. A hen can always find a grain of corn by itself. Besides, it can lay eggs. I think I will strike a bargain.
From thought to action goes no further than the tongue can travel in a few seconds. The gatekeeper got the goose and the farmer the hen. The farmer has done a lot that morning, and he had traveled far. He was thirsty and hungry. The sun was baking hot, as if it had been hired by the innkeeper. As he entered the inn, the farmer collided with one of the servants, who was carrying a sack over his shoulder. The farmer asked the servant,
"Say, what have you got in the sack?"
Rotten apples. And I'm on my way to the pig pen with them.
A whole sack full? What an awful lot that is. Oh, I wish Mother could see it. Last year, on our old apple tree next to the woodshed, there was only one single apple. Mother put it in the cupboard, and there it lay until it was all dried up and no bigger than a walnut. Makes me feel rich just to look at it, she used to say. Think how she would feel if she had a whole sack full.
Well, the words were no sooner said than the farmer had a sack of rotten apples in his hands, and the servant now held the hen. Well, now, after that, the farmer went into the tap room, which was crowded with people. There were butchers, farmers, merchants, horse dealers, and even a couple of Englishmen who were so rich that their pockets were bursting with gold coins. All Englishmen like to gamble. That's a tradition in their country. Now, just listen to what happened. The tap room was next to the kitchen, and the stove that was used for cooking extended right through the kitchen wall into the tap room. Innkeepers are economical, and this kind of stove is great saving in the winter. The farmer, without giving it a thought, put his sack of apples down in the stove, and soon they began to simmer and sputter. The apples said and aroused the curiosity of one of the Englishmen. And so he asked around to find out what the noise was. And the farmer said,
"I traded my horse for a cow, my cow for a sheep, my sheep for a goose, my goose for a hen, and finally the hen for a sack of rotten apples."
And the Englishman said,
"Your wife will beat you with a rolling pin when you get home. She'll raise the roof."
The Englishman commented, but the farmer explained,
"Beat me? She'll kiss me and say that what father does is always right."
Then said the Englishman,
"I'll make you a wager. A barrel of gold and a sack full of silver."
And again the farmer explained,
"The barrel of gold is enough, and if I lose, I'll fill a barrel with rotten apples, and you can have mother and me for good measure."
And the Englishman said,
"Done, done,"
cried the Englishman, for betting is in their blood. So they hired the innkeeper's horses and his carriage, and off they went, rotten apples and all. When they came to the farmer's house, they drove right up to the door. The old dog barked, and the farmer's wife came out to greet them.
"Good evening, Mother."
"Well, thank God you arrived safely."
"Well, I traded the horse."
"Trading is a man's business. And in spite of all these people, I'll throw my arms around you and kiss you."
"I traded it for a cow."
"Oh, thank goodness for the milk. Now we'll have both butter and cheese. That was a good bargain."
"But I traded the cow for a sheep."
"Oh, how clever of you. We have just enough grass for a sheep, and sheep's milk is good, and the cheese is good, too. I can knit socks and a nightshirt from the wool. And I wouldn't have been able to do anything with cow's hair. A cow just shed her hair, and that's all. What a wise and thoughtful husband you are."
But I traded the sheep for a fat goose."
"Oh, my good husband, are we really going to have a goose on St. Martin's Eve? You are always thinking of ways to please me." "We will tether the goose in the ditch, and by November she'll be even fatter."
I traded the goose for a hen."
he said proudly, for now he realized how very well he had done that day.
"Well, now, that was a good exchange. Hens lay eggs, and from eggs come little chicks."
"Mm-hmm."
"Soon we shall have a real barnyard, and that is something I've always wanted."
But I traded the hen for a sack full of rotten apples."
"Well, now, my dear husband, I must kiss you."
"Oh?"
"Yes, while you were away, I thought that I would like to make a fine supper for you to eat when you got home, and I decided to make an omelet with chives, and I had eggs but no chives, and our neighbor, the schoolmaster, has chives, but as all the world knows, his wife is a stingy old cow. I mean, crow. Stingy old crow."
"Crow, yes."
"Yes. And when I asked her whether I could borrow..."
"She's kind of a cow, too."
"Yeah, well, she is, yes." And when I asked her whether I could borrow some chives, "Borrow," she squawked, "nothing grows in your garden, not even a rotten apple. Now I can lend her 10 rotten apples. Or even a sackful if she wants them. That was the best bargain of all. And now I must give you a kiss again."
The Englishman said,
"Oh, we'd like that, from bad to worse, and they do not even know it. Always happy, always contented. Oh, that was worth the money."
And they gave the barrel full of gold coins to the farmer whose wife gave him kisses instead of blows.
Yes, it pays for a wife to admit that her husband is cleverer than she is.
Well, that was the story. I heard it when I was a boy, and now you've heard it too. And now you know that what father does is always right.
You can tell this is an old story. There was once a poor prince. He had a kingdom, and though it wasn't very big, it was large enough to marry on, and married he wanted to be. Now, it was rather bold of him to say to the emperor's daughter, "Do you want me?" But he was a young man of spirit who was quite famous, and there were at least 100 princesses who would have said thank you very much to his proposal. But the emperor's daughter didn't. Let us tell you the story.
On the grave of the prince's father, there grew a rose tree. It was a beautiful tree that only flowered every fifth year, and then it bore only one rose. The rose had such a sweet fragrance that anyone who smelled it forgot immediately all about his sorrow and troubles. The prince also owned a nightingale, which sang as though all the melodies ever composed lived. Nightingale really knows how to sing interesting songs. So beautiful was its song, the prince decided to send the rose and the nightingale to the emperor's daughter and had two little silver chests made to put them in.
The emperor ordered the gifts to be carried into the grand assembly room where the princess was playing house with her ladies-in-waiting. That was their favorite game. They never played any other. When the princess saw the pretty little silver chests, she clapped her hands and jumped for joy.
"Oh, I hope one of them contains a pretty little kitten."
She opened the chest. She found a rose. And the ladies-in-waiting said,
"It is very prettily made."
Yes.
And the ladies-in-waiting, then the princess touched the rose and almost wept with disappointment.
"Oh, Papa, it is not glass. It is real."
"Oh, how revolting. It is real."
"Yes,"
said the ladies-in-waiting.
However, the emperor added,
"Let's see what is in the other chest first before we get angry."
And there they found the nightingale, who sang so beautifully that it was difficult to find anything wrong with it.
Then said the ladies-in-waiting,
"Oh, superb! Charmant!"
They all spoke French, one worse than the other.
"You know, I would like to know if that is real, too,"
said the princess. And of course it was.
"In that case, we will let the bird fly away."
And she sent a messenger to say that she would not even permit the prince to come inside her father's kingdom.
But the prince was not easily discouraged. He put on a baggy coat and a hat on his head, and then he walked up to the emperor's castle and knocked. When the emperor spoke with the young man asked him,
"Can I get a job in the castle?"
And the emperor shook his head and said,
"Oh, there are so many people who want to work here, but I do need someone to tend the pigs. We have such an awful lot of them."
So the prince was hired as the emperor's swineherd. There was a tiny, dirty room next to the pig pen. That was where he was expected to live. And the young men spent the rest of the day making a very little pot, very pretty little pot, and by evening it was finished, and the pot had little bells all around it, and when it boiled, they played ever so sweetly.
"Ach, the lieber Augustine, 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 ach, Lieber Augustin, alles ist hin. Rockistin, Stockistin, Geldistin, Liebistin, ach, der lieber Augustin, alles ist hin.
Did you ever see a lassie, a lassie, a lassie? Did you ever see a lassie go this way and that? Go this way and that way, go that way and this way. Did you ever see a lassie go this way and that?
But the strangest and most wonderful thing about the pot was that if you held your finger in the steam above it, you could smell what was cooking on any stove in that town. Now, there was something a little different from a rose.
The princess was out walking with her ladies in waiting, and when she heard the musical pot, she stopped immediately. She listened and smiled. For Ach du lieber Augustin, she could play herself on the piano with one finger.
Oh, it is a song I know. That swineherd must be cultured. Please go in and ask him what the instrument costs.
One of the ladies in waiting was ordered to run over to the pig pen, but to put wooden shoes on first. When the swineherd was asked the price for the pot, he said,
10 kisses from the princess. I will not settle for less.
When the lady in waiting returned to the princess with the swineherd's demands, the princess replied,
he is very naughty.
But she had gone only a few steps when she heard the bells again, and they sounded even sweeter to her than before.
Rockistin, Stockistin, Geldistin, Liebistin, Ach, der lieber Augustin, alles ist hin.
Did you ever see a lassie, a lassie, a lassie?
Did you ever see a lassie go this way and that? Go this way and that way, go that way and this way. Did you ever see a lassie go this way and that?
Listen, ask him if he will be satisfied with 10 kisses from one of my ladies-in-waiting.
No,
was the reply. Oh, that's your line.
No, was the reply from the swineherd.
Oh, this is most embarrassing. You will all have to stand around me so no one can see it.
And the ladies-in-waiting formed a circle and held out their skirts so no one could peep. The swineherd got his kisses and the princess the pot. What a grand time they had. All day and all evening they made the little pot boil. There wasn't a stove in the whole town that had anything cooking on it that they didn't know about. They knew what was served for dinner on every table, both the counts and the cowherds. The ladies-in-waiting were so delighted that they clapped their little hands. The swineherd, that is to say, the prince, whom everyone thought was a swineherd, did not like to waste his time, so he constructed a rattle, which was so ingenious that when you swung it around, it played all the waltzes, polkas, and dance melodies ever composed since the creation of the world. And as the princess walked by the pigsty, she exclaimed,
"Oh, it is superb! I have never heard a more exquisite composition. Do go in and ask what he wants for the instrument, but I will not kiss him."
Once again, a lady-in-waiting was sent to speak to the swineherd. She returned, stating the price for the rattle would be 100 kisses from the princess. The princess declared,
"He must be mad. Still, one ought to encourage art. I am the emperor's daughter. Tell him he can have 10 kisses from me, just as he got yesterday. The rest he can get from my ladies-in-waiting."
But the ladies-in-waiting said,
"But we don't want to kiss him.
We don't want to kiss him. Good heavens, no,"
replied all the ladies-in-waiting.
"Stuff and nonsense. If I can kiss him, you can too. Besides, what do you think I give you room and board for?"
And one of the ladies-in-waiting went to talk with the swineherd.
100 kisses from the princess or I keep the rattle,"
was the message she came back with.
"Well, then gather all around me."
The ladies-in-waiting took their positions, and the kissing began.
"I wonder what is going on down there by the pigsty,"
said the emperor, who was standing out on the balcony. He rubbed his eyes and put his glasses on, and he said,
"Ah, It is the ladies in waiting. Ah, what the devilment are they up to? I'd better go down and see.
Then he pulled up the backs of his slippers, for they were really only a comfortable old pair of shoes with broken backs. And oh, how he ran! But as soon as he came near the pigsty, he walked on tiptoe. The ladies-in-waiting were so busy counting kisses to make sure that the bargain was justly carried out and that the swineherd did not get one kiss too many or too few, that they didn't hear or see the emperor, who was standing on tiptoe outside the circle. And when he saw the kissing, he took off one of his slippers and started hitting the ladies-in-waiting on the tops of their heads just as the swineherd was getting his 86th kiss.
"Heralds, get out!"
he screamed, for he was really angry. Boy, is he angry. And both the swineherd and the princess were thrown out of his empire.
And there they stood. The princess was crying. The swineherd was grumbling.
Poor me. If only I had married the prince. Oh, I'm so unhappy.
The swineherd stepped behind a tree, took off his baggy coat and large hat, and put on his splendid royal robes.
He looked so impressive that the princess curtsied when she saw him.
"I have come to despise you,"
he told the princess.
"You did not want an honest prince. You did not appreciate the rose or the nightingale. But you could kiss a swineherd for the sake of a toy. Farewell."
The prince entered his own kingdom and locked the door behind him. And there the princess could stand and sing. Ach, du lieber Augustin. For indeed, everything was all gone. But far out in the country, there was this ancient manor house.
This is another story.
Oh, that was the end of the other one.
That was the end of the other story.
That was kind of sad.
That was the story of the swineherd. Yes, far out in the country, there was an ancient manor house. And the squire who lived in it had two sons. Both of them were so clever that they could answer more questions than anyone would care to ask them. Well, they decided to propose to the princess. This is another princess. And this they dared to do because the princess had officially proclaimed that she would marry the man in her kingdom who spoke with the most wit.
Ah, and they had only, what, 1 week?
1 week.
1 week to prepare themselves. But that was enough, for they were well-educated, and that is an advantage. One of them knew by heart the Latin dictionary and the town newspaper for the last 3 years, and that backward as well as forward. The other one memorized all the guild laws and regulations, even the ones that most guild masters had never heard about. He felt that this enabled him to discourse, talk on politics. Besides that, he could embroider suspenders, for he was artistic.
And the brothers said,
"I will win the princess."
Well, then what happened?
Their father gave them each a horse. The son who knew the dictionary and the newspapers by heart was given a black horse. The embroiderer, an expert on guild laws, won as white as milk. Now, they greased their jaws with cod liver oil in order to be able to speak more faster, even faster than usually.
Blech.
And, oh, but you speak very fast when you use cod liver oil. And then they were ready to depart. All the servants were lined up to wave goodbye. Just as the two brothers were mounting their horses, their younger brother came running out of the house. I haven't mentioned him before because no one thought anything of the younger brother, and he wasn't really wasn't considered part of the family. He was not a scholar like the other two, and that is why they called him Simple Simon.
"Hey, you're all dressed up. Where are you going?"
Simple Simon asked his older brothers.
To the king's castle to win the princess by our wit. Haven't you heard what the drums have announced and the herald proclaimed? Haven't you heard of her decision to marry the man who could speak with the most wit?
Gee whiz. Hey, father, let me have a horse. I have just decided to get married. And if she takes me, well and good. If she doesn't, then I'll take her. goodness me, I am going.
Simple Simon's father disagreed. Nonsense! I will not give you a horse. You can't speak well. You have no wit. You're not even presentable. But Simple Simon replied,
well, if I can't have a horse, then I'll take a billy goat. That is mine, and I can ride it.
And up he jumped on the billy goat, dug his heels into its sides, and away he rode. The goat ran as fast as it could, and Simple Simon sang and shouted as loud as he could.
Here am I, here am I.
His two brothers did not say a word to each other. They were too busy getting witty ideas. They rode so sedately you might think they were attending a funeral. But as soon as Simple Simon caught up with them, he shouted,
here am I, and look what I found in the middle of the road.
He held up a dead crow for them to look at. The brothers asked Simon what he planned to do with the dead crow.
Give it to the princess.
His brothers just laughed and rode on a little bit faster, but they didn't want to be seen with their brother, Simple Simon. But in a few minutes, Simple Simon approached his brothers again.
Hello, hello, here I am again. Look what I have found. It is not every day that one stumbles across such a treasure.
The two brothers turned around in their saddles to see what their little brother had now. Simon, they said, it is only an old wooden shoe and broken at that. Are you going to give that to the princess, too?
Yeah, I certainly will.
But his brothers laughed and spurred their horses. And a little while later, they heard Simple Simon screaming.
Hello, hello, here am I. It is too marvelous. Just look. Look what I got. Mud. I got mud from the ditch. Mud of the very best quality. The kind that slips and oozes right through your fingers. I have filled my pockets with it.
Now, this time, the brothers did not laugh. They just rode as fast as they could and arrived at the city gate a whole hour before Simple Simon. Everyone who had come to propose to the princess was given a number and had to line up in a row. They stood so close together that they couldn't move their arms, and that was fortunate, for otherwise they would have torn each other's eyes out, not just because one had got there ahead of the other.
All the other citizens of the town crowded around the castle and tried to look through their windows. They wanted to watch the princess receiving her suitors. And as each of them entered the royal hall, he seemed to lose his tongue. For all of them could only stammer and mutter.
No good,
said the princess every time.
Yeah.
Out!
Then the first of the brothers entered. The one who knew the Latin dictionary and the newspapers by heart. He had forgotten every word, and all he could do was stammer while he stood in the row with the other suitors. Well, the floor creaked as he walked across it, and the ceiling of the room was an enormous mirror that reflected everything upside down. At one of the windows stood three scribes and an alderman who wrote down all that was said so that it could be printed in the newspaper, which would be sold in the streets that very afternoon for tuppence. And if that was not frightening enough, the heat would have made anyone uncomfortable. The stoves had red-hot pot bellies.
Boy, it is hot in here,
said the unhappy suitor. And the princess answered,
that is because my father is roasting roosters today.
Well, now that wasn't what the suitor had expected the princess to say. And there he stood with his mouth open. He wanted to say something witty, but all he did was stand there with his mouth open. The princess demanded that the first brother leave. Now came the second brother.
Well, it's terribly hot in here, isn't it?
He said.
The princess said,
yes, we are roasting roosters.
Then mumbled the poor man,
you did what?
And all the scribes wrote,
what did what?
And the princess said,
no good, out.
Now came Simple Simon.
He rode on his billy goat right into the royal hall.
Gee whiz, goodness me, it's sure warm in here.
Oh, that is because I am roasting roosters today.
Well, that is fine. Maybe I can get my crow fried as well.
Well, that might be possible, but do you have anything to fry it in? All our pots and pans are in use.
Sure I have. You see this wooden shoe?
Ooh, yes.
Now here's a pot to put it in, and I'll just drop the crow into the shoe.
Why? It is enough for a meal, but where are you going to get the gravy?
I've got pockets full of it.
Gravy in your pockets?
Yes. So much that I have some to spare. Here, look at all this wonderful mud.
That is what I like. Somebody who can speak up for himself. I will marry you. But do you know that every word we have said has been written down and will be printed in the newspaper?
At one of the window stands, three scribes and an old alderman.
That one is the worst, because he does not understand a word of what anyone says.
The princess said this to frighten Simple Simon. And the scribes neighed like horses.
And shook their pens. First they neighed.
Oh.
And shook their pens so blots of ink sprayed onto the floor.
Well, if the alderman is the most important, then he deserved the best. I'll take all the mud out of my pockets, and I'll throw it in your face, you old man.
Oh, that was nobly done. I couldn't have done it, but I am sure I will learn how.
So Simple Simon married the princess and became king. And he sat on a throne with a crown on his head.
We got this story straight out of the alderman's newspaper. And of course, that cannot be trusted.
Simple Simon.
We have one more tale.
One more tale. It's a favorite of many, I know.
Oh, I think this is one of my favorites.
Yeah. It's about President Reagan's new clothes.
No. Mm-hmm. No, the emperor. The emperor's new clothes.
Oh, the emperor's new clothes. Emperor's new clothes. Many, many years ago, there was an emperor who was terribly fond of beautiful new clothes that he spent all his money on his attire. He didn't care about his soldiers or attending the theater or even going for a drive in the park unless it was to show off his new clothes. He had an outfit for every hour of the day. And just as we say, the king is in his council chamber, his subjects used to say, the emperor is in his clothes closet.
Now, in the large town where the emperor's palace was, life was gay and happy, and every day new visitors arrived. One day, two swindlers came into the village and the castle. They told everybody that they were weavers and that they could weave the most marvelous cloth. Not only were the colors and the patterns of their material extraordinarily beautiful, but the cloth had the strange quality of being invisible to anyone who was unfit for his office or unforgivably stupid.
Oh, boy, this is truly marvelous,
thought the emperor.
Now, if I had robes cut from that material, I should know which of my counselors was unfit for his office, and I would be able to pick out my clever subjects myself. They must weave some material for me.
And he gave the swindlers a lot of money so they could start working at once. Well, the weavers, the swindlers, set up a loom and acted as if they were weaving. But the loom was empty. The fine silk and gold threads they demanded from the emperor they never used, but hid them in their own knapsacks. Late into the night, they would sit before their empty loom, pretending to weave.
You know, I'd like to know how they're getting along,
thought the emperor. But his heart beat strangely when he remembered that those who were stupid or unfit for their office would not be able to see the material. Not that he was really worried that this would happen to him. Still, it might be better to send someone else the first time and see how he fared. Everybody in town had heard about the cloth's magic quality, and most of them could hardly wait to find out how stupid or unworthy their neighbors were.
I shall send my faithful prime minister over to see how the weavers are getting along. He will know how to judge the material, for he is both clever and fit for his office, if any man is. I'll do that.
So the good-natured old man stepped into the room where the weavers were working and saw the empty loom. He closed his eyes and opened them again.
God preserve me,
he thought.
I cannot see a thing.
But he didn't say it out loud. The swindlers asked him to step a step closer to the loom so that he could admire the intricate patterns and marvelous colors of the material they were weaving. They both pointed to the empty loom, and the poor old prime minister opened his eyes as wide as he could. But it didn't help. He still couldn't see anything.
Am I stupid?
He thought.
I can't believe it. But if it is so, it is best no one finds out about it. But maybe I am not fit for my office. No, that is worse. I'd better not admit that I can't see what they are weaving. And tell us what you think of it,
demanded one of the swindlers.
Oh, it is beautiful. It is very lovely,
mumbled the old prime minister, adjusting his glasses.
What patterns, what colors! I shall tell the emperor that it pleases me ever so much.
That is a compliment,
both the weavers said. And now they described the patterns and told which shades of color they had used. The prime minister listened attentively so that he could repeat their words to the emperor. And that's exactly what he did. The two swindlers demanded more money and more silk and gold thread. They said they had to use it for their weaving. But their loom remained as empty as ever. Well, soon the emperor sent another of his trusted counselors to see how the work was progressing. He looked and looked just as the prime minister had. But since there was nothing to be seen, he didn't see anything.
Isn't it a marvelous piece of material?
Asked one of the swindlers. And they both began to describe the beauty of their cloth again.
I am not stupid,
thought the emperor's counselor.
I must be unfit for my office. That is strange, but I'd better not admit it to anyone.
And he started to praise the material, which he could not see. He started to praise it for the loveliness of its patterns and its colors.
I think it is the most charming piece of material I have ever seen,
declared the counselor to the emperor. Everyone in town was talking about the marvelous cloth that the swindlers were weaving. At last, the emperor himself decided to see it before it was removed from the loom. Attended by the most important people in the empire, among them the prime minister and the counselor who had been there before, the emperor entered the room where the weavers were weaving furiously on their empty loom.
Isn't it magnifique?
Asked the prime minister.
Your Majesty, look at the colors and the patterns,
said the counselor.
And the two old gentlemen pointed to the empty loom, believing that all the rest of the company could see the cloth.
What?
Thought the emperor.
I can't see a thing. Why, this is a disaster. Am I stupid? Am I unfit to be emperor? Oh, this is too horrible.
Aloud, he said.
It is lovely. It has my approval.
While he nodded his head and looked at the empty loom, all the counselors, ministers, and men of great importance who had come with him stared and stared, but they saw no more than the emperor had seen. And they said the same thing that he had said.
Oh, that's lovely.
Wonderful.
Nice. Beautiful.
Yes, that's
material.
Right. I like it.
And they advised him to have clothes cut and sewn so that he could wear them in the procession at the next great celebration.
Oh, it's magnificent.
Oh, beautiful.
All intended to take the cloth from the loom. They cut the air with their big scissors and sewed with needles without thread. At last, they announced that the emperor's clothes are ready.
Together with his courtiers, the emperor came. The swindlers lifted their arms as if they were holding something in their hands and said,
these are the trousers, this is the robe, and here is the train. They are all as light as if they were made of spider webs. It will be as if your majesty had almost nothing on. But that is their special virtue. Will your imperial majesty be so gracious as to take off your clothes?
Asked the swindlers.
Over there, by the big mirror, we shall help you put your new ones on.
Well, the emperor did as he was told, and the swindlers acted as if they were dressing him in the clothes they should have made. Finally, they tied around his waist the long train, which two of his most noble courtiers were to carry.
The emperor stood in front of the mirror, admiring the clothes he couldn't see.
Well, I am dressed. Aren't my clothes becoming, though?
The emperor turned around once more in front of the mirror, pretending to study his finery. None of them were willing to admit that they hadn't seen a thing. For if anyone did, then he was either stupid or unfit for the job he held. Never before had the emperor's clothes been such a success.
The emperor walked in the procession under a royal blue canopy. And all the people of the town who had lined the streets or were looking down from the windows said that the emperor's clothes were beautiful.
What a magnificent robe.
Oh, and the train. Yes. Look at that.
How well the emperor's clothes suit him.
Yes, beautiful clothes.
Oh, yeah, they're beautiful.
The two gentlemen of the imperial bedchamber fumbled on the ground trying to find the train which they were supposed to carry. They didn't dare admit that they didn't see anything, so they pretended to pick up the train and held their hands as if they were carrying it. However, then a little child cried,
"But he doesn't have anything on!"
"Listen to the innocent one,"
said his proud father. And the people whispered among each other and repeated what the child had said.
"He doesn't have anything on.
He doesn't have anything on.
There's a little child who says that he has nothing on.
He has nothing on.
The emperor shivered, for he was certain that they were right. But he thought,
I must bear it till the procession is over.
And he walked even more proudly. And the two gentlemen of the imperial bedchamber went on carrying the train that wasn't there.
And that's the way it is. Saturday, October 23rd, 1982.
Thank you.